At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. This is the Friday News Roundup, and we are going to talk a little bit about domestic politics today, maybe have a look at Joe Biden's cabinet. But first, we're going to listen to a few messages.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back. Victor, as I always ask, what's on your mind today?
Well, I've got my hands around this little COVID bastard, it's usually a thing, and I'm squeezing in. And as I go in today, accounting, I have got back 50% of my energy, and I haven't been coughing, and I'm headed to Israel.
Oh, yes.
24 hours, and I'm going to defeat this little guy, this bad guy, this engineered virus, and when I'm in Israel, and come back perfectly healthy. How's that?
Yeah, I think that's probably just about right, and you probably will be healthy in the next few days. When this podcast plays, it will you will be in Israel at the time. So let's talk a little bit about the midterm elections. And what I noticed in all the elections and the runoffs that they were having this last week, that the Democrats were celebrating some of their Pennsylvania winners, Summer Lee, who was Sanders endorsed, and John Fetterman, who is a Sanders supporter himself. And I thought that was unusually odd. And I was reading in Politico, they were celebrating this as a remaking of the Democratic Party to a more left, to more left leaning policies. And I was wondering about your thoughts about the midterm or this Democratic trend. It seems like it's a victory, as one newspaper put it, for the squad with Summer Lee. So very strange.
I don't think so. Yeah. The key thing to look at is when a majority party has fewer who turn out on election day than the minority party, and the Democrats had far fewer participants in the primary, then they're in bad trouble. And Fetterman had a stroke. I mean, he was talking. I mean, he was his communiques about his victory came from the hospital. So it was a mixed bag. And we don't really know, as I'm speaking, if Mr. Oz is one or not. That you get both views. What people are trying to do right now is to say that Trump. The main story is Trump endorsement of little or no value, a lot of value, or the kind of split the difference, some value. It depends on, I suppose, the candidate. We forget a lot about things. When we say about endorsements, I mean, if you endorse a bad candidate, I don't mean ideologically, but I mean just somebody who's not charismatic or doesn't speak well, then you're not going to do well. And so you don't get 10 to 0, but if you're, you know, 60-40, and Trump is, that's pretty good. But his endorsement, some, you know, his endorsement's not an ironclad guarantee. And what were he, I guess what I'm saying is, with this primary, we're getting close now to a constant drumbeat. Is Trump going to win? Is he going to run? Is he, his candidate's going to win? Is he going to run? Is he going to announce after the midterm? Most likely. Can you have Trumpism without Trump? And that's going to be, that's going to be very interesting to see how Trump treats that. I think you could make the argument that 80% support his agenda, but maybe 60, oh, I don't know, 55, 45 want him to run again, if that means somebody like DeSantis, who has executive experience and has been really sharpening his spurs the last, you know, 2 months, taking on Disney and taking on critical race theory, taking on the transgendered extremists. So what DeSantis is trying to do is saying, you know what, you can get the Trump agenda with me. You can get the ferocious counterattacks on the left with me, but you won't get, you know, these tweets about Stormy Daniels or something like that. And we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. But I don't, I think the Democrats know what's coming. They've accepted it. It's going to be a huge shock. They're going to try to do anything they can. Roe versus Wade, January 6th, Putin's price hikes, the Buffalo shootings, racism, racism, racism. But you know, it's, I keep using that image of a locomotive and they're tied to the tracks. And I just don't think that they're going to get out of it. They're not going to moderate. They're not going to negotiate. They're just going to go stay there on those tracks and say, look, look.
Yeah. Well, the results that I just talked about in Pennsylvania would suggest that you're correct in that, that they're just going to keep leaning, not just leaning left, but falling over left practically. So that doesn't seem like it pleases half of the members of their own party. So I think they are just going to trip over themselves and lose in the November elections.
Yeah. I mean, everybody says, well, you know, Trump endorsed Madison Cawthorn and he lost. He barely lost. I mean, he was a flawed candidate. Believe me, it was almost every single day a new photo emerged with his, I don't know what the word would be, sort of homoerotic or pederastic or I don't know, themes that were, and then he made all sorts of astounding, crazy statements and Trump stuck with him, but he had to. But it raises another interesting question is how does Trump endorse these candidates? Because some of them are pretty much ideologically aligned and you wonder who are their handlers and what is their influence with Trump's handlers. And I hope that, you know, that these candidates are not bidding for contracts with outside campaign consultants who then promise them that they're going to get Trump's endorsement because, you know, enough said, but you can see what that happens. When I see one of these talking heads say, well, you know, Trump is going to do this and Trump is going to do that, as if they are negotiating between Trump and the candidates and they're very highly paid. It's not good. And that's politics. But I guess what I'm trying to say is in the last analysis, we have one issue, and that is everybody accepts that Trump's program, other than spending too much money, was far superior to the antithesis. The antithesis is even going to get worse. So then the question is, who is going to direct that agenda? Is it somebody who created it, Donald Trump? Or is it someone who watched Donald Trump, emulated Donald Trump, and feels that his strengths are commensurate with Donald Trump's, but he doesn't have the downsides? And then left unsaid or left unspoken is 90% of Republicans, whatever they feel about the nominee, they will vote for Donald Trump if he's a nominee.
Yeah, that's true. It's hard to predict, though, what he's actually going to do because
he's going to be 79 years old.
And yeah, I was going to say.
I mean, when a person's, I'm 68 and, you know, after 3 weeks of COVID, and I think, would I want to do what? I mean, I almost had sympathy for Joe Biden today, flying around. And God, I thought, wow, I couldn't figure out today. I watched a clip and he's 79 and he was walking down the steps, right? And there was nobody around it. And he had a mask on. And then he came down to meet all these people, and he took his mask off. I thought, wow, this is so weird. Is it a photo op mask or what?
He's trying to get COVID and destroy his lungs with all the fibers in a mask at the same time.
This COVID, I know people with hyper. I have a hyper allergic. I get, I have histamine problems. I get hyper allergic. And they say people that are hyper immune then have a bad response to COVID. I've heard people that have a low immune response, they need shot after shot booster to get immune. Children are getting Omicron. Omicron is just said to the whole pandemic, everything you guys said, Omicron virus stands on its back legs and says, everything you guys said about COVID is a lie. I can infect children. I can make people sick very long. I can put more in the hospital than Delta, and I'm changing. So somewhere there's a truth, and I would like to live long enough to see some open inquiry to look at this virus and have a chart and say, look, this is its ability to mutate. This is its ability to be infectious compared to other viruses and see if it's normal.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem normal to me.
All right, Victor, let's move on then.
Let's get away from medicine, or we'll get into monkeypox, and I don't want to go there.
Okay, let's talk about the Durham investigation instead. So we have emails showing a cozy relationship between Michael Sussman and the FBI director, James Baker. Or actually, they were texts, I take that back. And then testimony that Hillary was informed on the taking of information to the FBI, to James Baker by Michael Sussman. So that was a revelation in the court just a couple of days ago. What do you make of the Durham investigation at this point?
Well, here's what he's exposed. And I think Devin Nunes had more or less outlined it, but he didn't have access to these testimonies. Well, let's just walk through what happened. Hillary Clinton, in mid early 2016, cannot stand Donald Trump, and she's terrified of him, and everybody's terrified of him. And then we had the email scandal, and Trump joked about, hey, maybe Russia can help us find it. She went ballistic. So she called her personal lawyer and her DNC lawyer, Mark Elias, and said, this guy is out beyond the pale. You've got to do something. So then he went to his former friend at Perkins Coie, Michael Sussman. And remember, these people are not minor players. Mark Elias is probably the chief left-wing ballot voting, change the rules lawyer in the country. And Michael Sussman was a cyber expert lawyer and with vast prosecutorial experience. And they're working in the same law firm. And they said, you've got to do something. And someone mentions Fusion GPS. So they think, well, there was that dossier that some of the right wing will just call up old Michael Steele. Christopher Steele, excuse me. So they get, there's two tracks then. One is Christopher Steele in the dossier. And it's fake. He hasn't been to Soviet Union in 13 years. I think Fiona Hill, remember her from the impeachment? The anglicized former British subject who was so prim and proper and professional. Well, she was the one that was the liaison between Dushenko and Christopher Steele. So then Dushenko just lies and makes up all these rumors. And then he hands them over with Mr. Dolan, this Hillary former subordinate that's now in Russia himself. And they concoct all these crazy stories. And then Steele has the ability to put into a brew plant, like it's a fake serious document, capital letters, borders, all this crap. And at the same time, Sussman has another GP, Sussman via Clemson, and they have another line, another wave of assault. And that is they contact apparently a number of techies who have a contract to examine some of the communications emanating out of Trump Tower. And Rodney Joffe is pretty much a self-described expert, one of the best in his field. And remember that email that came out during the trial, that he was bragging to people that if Hillary won, i.e. his vested interest is to see Hillary win, then he would be chief of cybersecurity. And he comes back and tells Sussman that there's this strange thing going on and there's pings going back. So there we are. So what does Sussman do? He contacts Elias, apparently. We'll see. That's going to come out. But then he thinks, nobody's going to believe me if I plant this story. I'm going to plant it, but we need some authenticity. So I'll call up my own old buddy. You know, James Baker claims he wasn't as friendly. Or how do you have my cell phone? Well, that's a ruse. So he calls him up and says, I'm not working for anybody. You know, James Baker says, he told me he wasn't working for anybody. You believe that? Come on. Michael Sussman calls up him on his cell phone and says, I'm not working. I'm a patriot. I just got this Joff, who everybody knows is a Clinton partisan, and he's just found some mysterious pings. So, and Durham is very professional. He doesn't editorialize. He just presents the evidence. And then Baker, I guess, calls Comey out. Comey, and then, you know, he has the FBI look at it, CIA look at it. Immediately, they start leaking. I think it was Slate. Jake Sullivan is the National Security Advisor of the United States. He was tweeting out that Donald Trump is communicating with the Russians. It was a total lie in a back channel. And Hillary Clinton was doing that. So that's what she concocted it all. She used a paywall. I said a firewall. So she didn't want to be connected with Mark Elias. So she said he's the DNC attorney. And he didn't want to be connected. So he said it's the Perkins Coie law firm with Sussman. And Sussman says, well, it's Fusion GPS. And Fusion GPS says, well, you know, it's the Steele dossier and Josh. That's how they work. And the bottom line is they destroyed 3 years of the Trump administration and American life, because Hillary Clinton concocted a total ruse. She gaslighted the nation. She made it out of whole cloth. She fed it to every media. They ran with it. They ran with it from the day he entered office. When I would drive down the 99, you would see posters about billboards with Devin Nunes, the puppet of the Russians. That was the narrative. 22 months, $40 million, dream team, hunter killer lawyers, all stars. They gushed over these people, the left did. And there was nothing.
Do you think Donald Trump would have been harder on the Russians if those things hadn't been going on while he was in?
Well,
he was pretty hard on the Russians anyways. He rearmed Poland.
I was waiting for you to say that. Yeah. So what did Donald Trump do to the Russians? Did he have a hot mic like Barack Obama and say, tell Vladimir to get me some room and I'll be flexible on missile defense, and this is my last election, if you might keep quiet? And he kept quiet, and Obama got reelected, and Obama got rid of missile defense and the polls and the checks. And then when he fulfilled the bargain, he went into Eastern Ukraine and the Crimea. That's what Obama did. Oh, yeah. He also put a hold on Javelin missiles.
Yep.
So Trump came in, and what did he do? He said, no more reset. And he sold offensive weapons, which nobody seemed to care about. Mr. Vindman didn't care about it when he was the ringleader of impeachment. He delayed him a little bit because he had a crazy idea, Sammy. Donald Trump got it into his head that the entire Biden regime, and this is in the interregnum, i.e. he left the vice presidency and he was still, that's when he was most lucrative, because he wasn't in office, but he was a private citizen, but he was winking and nodding he would be president someday. And that family, but they were doing it when he was vice president as well, but that family Donald Trump thought was crooked. I don't know where he got that idea, but he got impeached. He got impeached for it. He got impeached for saying that. It was, and Joe Biden had rang, son of a bitch, I fired that guy. Ha, ha, ha.
I know.
He was bragging about it. So that's what it did to the country. And Donald Trump raised sanctions. He killed 200 mercenaries, Russian. They called up, the military called them up and said, we got a bunch of Russian militaries that are approaching this installation in Syria and they're ready to attack us. He said, kill them. And they did. Yeah. And with people in his national security team said, you know, there's an intermediate missile treaty with Russia. They always break it. He said, get out of it.
You're telling me that this Steele dossier and this bugging of the Trump towers really didn't stop Donald Trump from doing the things he would do with the Russians anyway, right? So because Donald he stayed Trump, as tough as he was.
I you know, when I wrote the case for Trump, I read 10 of those books. And it's just the same narrative. It's ghostwritten, but it's the same thing. You don't insult the person you're going to crush. You brag on him. You say you get along with him. You talk with him. Everybody got mad at Trump. I like Putin. I can talk to Putin. And then he crushed him. He got out of the missile deal. He killed Russians. He upped sanctions. He poured oil. He crashed the Russian oil price. He made NATO spend $100 billion. I'm glad they did. They wouldn't have weapons right now to send to Ukraine. He upped us, our military budget, by $80 billion. He did all he could. He triangulated with the Chinese back and forth. He did all he could to weaken Putin. And Putin, don't believe me, what did Putin do from 2017 in January to 2020?
So he didn't invade the Ukraine.
He didn't invade Georgia, Alsatia. He didn't invade the Donbass. He didn't invade Crimea. Yeah, he didn't. And what did he do right after Trump led office? He tried to decapitate Kiev. That's what he did. And so we can have all these, I don't know, pointy head, brilliant strategic thinkers. But the fact is, that's the record. And yeah. So he was very hard on Putin, but he could have made a deal with Putin and kept Putin out of Ukraine had he had some flexibility. But he couldn't, because anything that was interpreted as moderate to a man who was, you know, overseeing 7,000 nuclear weapons was considered proof that that Donald Trump was a colluder. So it really destroyed his ability to make foreign policy. It really did. And it consumed that administration for 22 months. And the moment it collapsed in the spring, an early summer, they went right into impeachment. And you look back at that first impeachment and the whole Mueller investigation, it was a damn joke. When you get good old Bob Mueller gets in front of a Senate Intelligence Committee and he's put under oath, and they ask him what was the Steele dossier's role and what was the Fusion GPS doing in this, I don't know, we don't get in there, the two pillars of the investigation. And they bring James Comey in, that was under, you know, lock and key, that was secret testimony, but apparently 245 times he said, I don't know, was it my purview, how should I know? And then you get Andrew McCabe in there. Three times he lied, or maybe was it four, to a federal investigator. No need to go into Brennan and Clapper. So these were pathological liars and dissimulators, and it really hurt the country. And Hillary Clinton, all roads lead to Hillary. And so this is what Durham does not leak. He doesn't have late night phone calls with the press. He does not trust the press. He will fire anybody on that team that leaks. He goes after one individual and he finds a clear cut crime. Did you or did you not lie to a FBI official, Mr. Sussman, when you said you were not representing anybody? Well, it's my word against his. No, it's not. He took notes. Well, so did I. Well, he showed his notes to other people and they confirmed right after that that's what you said. Well, that's what he thought he said. Okay, then why did you bill the Clinton law firm if you weren't working for them? Well, I was doing a lot of stuff, but you know, it's not his only hope. The only hope to crush Durham right now, there's three things that can crush him. This Judge Cooper, who's an Obama partisan, or this thing goes to a jury, and they're counting on a Washington, D.C. jury to be partisan and jury nullification, or Merrick Garland steps in and just stops it.
Yeah. And that's not going to happen, probably.
We'll see.
Or maybe. He may feel like he needs to save Hillary, I guess is what you're saying.
If Merrick Garland stops Durham and the Republicans win the midterms, and they will, they won't remove him, but they will impeach Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to impeach Mayorkas as well. He should. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that created the Ministry of Disinformation and then completely failed to take his oath of office seriously, and he didn't enforce federal immigration law.
Victor, hold on to that idea, and let's go ahead and take a few messages or a moment for a few messages, and then we'll come right back and talk about the Biden cabinet. We'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back. I wanted to remind everybody that Victor is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow in Classics and Military History at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. He has a website, victorhanson.com, and he does a lot of exclusive material on that website, VDH Ultra material and articles, some 2,400 to 3,000 words a week. So it's a great deal to subscribe to at victorhanson.com, The Blade of Perseus. Victor's, you started right in on my next subject, and that was Biden's cabinet. And I thought maybe we'd do a little round table and talk about each one. And you were on Merrick Garland, the attorney general, and you feel that he could or possibly might be up for impeachment if the Congress turns Republican,
If Merrick Garland would fire Durham, I think he would be subject to impeachment. Yes.
Oh, got it.
I don't think he would be subject to conviction in the Senate because I'm not sure they're going to get 60 votes. But what is Merrick Garland? You know, let me just say that one of the weirdest things, I had an older brother that was a novelist, a very good novelist, NALS. And 42 years ago, he introduced me to a book called Confederacy of Dunces. And it was written by this guy named John Kennedy Toole, who I think he committed suicide. He lived with his mother, and it's kind of an autobiographical story of misfits in the American society, very brilliant people who can't make it. And they have pathologies, you know, and they don't make it, but they're kind of sympathetic. But in their self-destruction, they reveal some of the contradictions in American life. Okay, Confederacy of Dunces. This, I'm just using that because this cabinet is a cabinetcy of dunces. It is. If you look at Merrick Garland, this is a man because a teachers' union official concocted the idea that these wonderful parents that were worried about their children's education and the school system in Virginia, and there was a election coming up, he said that these people are threatening. Everybody gets threatened. I get threatened all the time. I don't call the FBI. It happened five or six times in my life, 10 times probably altogether. I mean, if you look at, if you call threats a private email and said, if you ever come to Washington, I'm going to shoot you, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Merrick Garland set up a particular task force and assigned the FBI to investigate parents for questioning whether their kids should be indoctrinated. And there was even suggestions that these FBI undercover were going to school board meetings. That's the guy who's the attorney general right now.
Yeah.
No, he's the one that, I guess, went after James O'Keefe. And I guess the FBI has become a retrieval service for Hunter's laptop and Biden's missing his daughter's missing diary. Okay, he's the attorney general. Look at the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. He's on record that the two existential threats to the U.S. military are climate change and white supremacy. And I guess when you look at the world, North Korea and the Iran deal coming up, and China vis-a-vis Taiwan, what Russia is doing in Ukraine, we're all worried right now about climate change and white supremacy. That's what he said. He also said something that I think was really, really stupid and dangerous. Austin said the other day that the purpose of our efforts with Ukraine is to weaken Russia to the extent it can never do something like this in Ukraine again. Okay, we all want them to get out of Ukraine. They're committing war crimes. Let's have them defeated. But you do not say publicly that the purpose of the United States in Ukraine is a proxy war to weaken a nuclear power, because we're getting into a situation. And we had a very spirited discussion about this on the Hoover Web podcast, Goodfellows, where I think our colleagues split 50-50, John Cochran, the eminent economist, and H.R. McMaster, the illustrious general and former national security advisor, vis-a-vis Neil Ferguson, the historian, and myself. And our point was that to win, as we are defining win, and as Lloyd Austin defines win, it means getting them all out of Russian-speaking majority areas. Okay. Fine. But they are going beyond that. They are now having commando raids going into Russia. Fine. Those are staging areas. Those are fuel depots. And they want to stop the supply of Crimea, and they want to open the supply to Ukrainian-held Odessa for the betterment of mankind to get food out. Fine. But they're talking about, they being our American strategists, they're talking about sinking the Russian Black Fleet with Harpoon missiles that we're going to give the Ukraine, 75 to 100 miles. So these ships leave the Russian ports, they blow up. That's an attack on a nuclear power. And so when Lloyd Austin brags about the stuff we're doing, and he says openly that sort of thing, believe me, we don't know what the Russian people think right now. My suspicion is, as they get up to 20,000 dead and one third of the army destroyed, and they see that the world hates them, and that their oligarchs are broke, are going to be broke pretty soon, they're going to be very angry with Vladimir Putin. But you go into Mother Russia, and you start running raids, and you start sinking Russian ships away from the coast of Ukraine, you're going to see a huge change. And so that's what Lloyd Austin, he's our Secretary of Defense. I don't even want to get into Jake Sullivan. He's our National Security Advisor, except we brought up the Durham investigation. He was the guy who had all of the points. He was tweeting. He was her campaign advisor. So Jake Sullivan was tweeting out to the American people, hey, there's a new story out that Donald Trump is communicating with a back channel in his tower with Russians. Well, Mr. Sullivan, you basically called a contender for the president of the other party a Russian puppet, our agent, or was committing treason. And you did it on no evidence. And that's the good interpretation. The bad interpretation is you knowingly knew, as a close associate of Hillary Clinton, that she was paying for this. Mm-hmm. And he is now the national security advisor. And we mm-hmm. go to Buttigieg. So I flew over to L.A. right before, you know, I got a little ill, and I went over there. And you know what? It was early April, mid-April. Those container ships are still stacked out there to the horizon. And the port of Los Angeles, you know, I think it 400,000 or 500,000 people in ships and trucks are employed by them. They got, I don't know, 7,000 acres. It's huge. It looks like you took a domino board and turned it upside down from the air. And where was Pete Buttigieg during this whole time? In January, he was home with his husband on a 2-month maternity leave while they were having old West style train robberies along the tracks leading into the port and places. And no, why didn't he say, I'm the Department of Transportation? That's a federal offense. I'm getting Merrick Garland. I'm going to go there and visit those train robberies. And you are interrupting interstate commerce. That's a federal crime. We're going to get special investigators. We're going to overrule Mr. Gascon.
Can I answer that question?
Yeah, while he was home with his husband watching his two children, babies. I understand.
They can't. Well, that, and they can't use the police. They it's the left wing. There's no, that's not an option. So they don't have anything they can do.
I guess they couldn't get a fit FBI to line up the gang leaders who were organizing that looting and theft. The saddest thing in my life was not my life, but this year I saw all of those little COVID-19 test kits.
Yeah.
And they were all there on the ground. People had ordered them and they never got them.
Yeah.
There were probably medicines. There was everything there. Nobody cares. It's a destruction of civilization. This guy is home. Yep. And he doesn't do anything. He hasn't done anything. That I'm Pete Buttigieg and I was mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and I, the Notre Dame town, and I was sanctimonious and snarky and I'm gay and you got to like me because I went to Afghanistan. So that's what that is our Secretary of Transportation. Look at our Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm. Remember they asked her in a Bloomberg interview, well, you know, as gas gets up in California to $6 a gallon, what are you in as energy? That's hilarious. Look, I don't run the oil companies. Oh, you don't? You just tell private financiers on Wall Street not to lend to frackers, or you make it difficult to put out lines of credit for horizontal drillers, or you shut down ANWR, or you cancel Keystone, or you say no more federal leases. Then we had this Holland, the Secretary of the Interior. Did you see her the other day when she was basically saying that we have the 5-year plan where all the leases, and Manchin, a Democrat, was, you know, interrogating her with Josh Hawley. And they said, well, where's the plan? You know, it's $5 a gallon. It's $7 for diesel. Where is the plan? We got all this oil and gas. We're working on it. It reminds me, there were 12 of our kids on this farm. And when they got together, the first cousins, I mean, it was holy terror. And every once in a while, an adult would take them somewhere. And they would get on the lake and get in their little canoes or something. It would be time to go. And so the parent who was put in charge of discipline and bring them all back home in the fruit van, they would say, okay, Billy, or okay, Benny, or whoever the one, it's time to go. And they'd say, can't hear you. Can't hear you. They were like 20 feet offshore and you couldn't get them. We're trying to hear you. Well, that's what she was doing. Yeah, we're going to do it. And while she was doing this, her aides were frantically sliding her notes, talking points of what to say. So she was looking down her note. Oh, okay. I'm supposed to say this. It was the most pathetic exhibition I've ever seen. It was pathetic. And so my point
is, it's because they are the party of lack of security and false therapeutics. I mean, that's all they do. It's crazy. But go ahead. Sorry, Victor.
It's absolutely right. And so my point is, I don't have time. We don't have time to go through all of these people. But what we're seeing is the ideologues that are. Everybody says this. Who in the hell is running the country? It can't be Joe Biden. And then there's a big national debate. Well, maybe it's Dr. Jill. Well, Dr. Jill doesn't know any more than Joe Biden. So if it is Dr. Jill, she's just a conduit. Well, then who is on the other end of the conduit? Is it the squad? Maybe. Is it Nancy Pelosi? Sort of, kind of, maybe. Is it Elizabeth Warren's group? Probably. Bernie Sanders? Likely. And the Obamas hovering around saying, you know what, we sold out, or we compromised. We weren't the great revolutionaries that but we're going to do it under Biden's auspices. So that's what the debate is about, who's running the country. The second debate is he crazy? Is he just mean? Or are they so crazy and mean that they think this is success? I wrote a column about that last week, that we think the border's a mess. They think, wow, we got 2 million in, we're going to go for 4. That's what we want. We don't care about COVID. We want everybody to come in out without vaccinations, without tests, no background audit. Ha ha, the right will go crazy. They'll start talking about the great replacement theory, the one that we created by calling, you know, the great demographic shift, the new democratic majority, demography is destiny. They were the replacement theorists, but maybe that's why. Or crime, they'll think, wow, crime? Crime's a construct, doesn't represent any natural law. A bunch of wealthy, white, Christian, heterosexual males dreamed up this idea that it's a crime to go steal a Snickers bar or take a, you know, some toothpaste. They don't ever do it, so why do they care? But all the people who need to, then it's a crime. It's a construct. And the same thing with the pipeline Keystone XL. You know, hey, we've canceled that and we got rid of Anwar, and Stephen Chu would be so happy. He may be in his 70s, but his dream in 2008 as the designate energy secretary is coming true. We're getting close to Europe. Price of gas. We'll beat them yet. And Afghanistan, that was the greatest pullout we've ever had. It did so much better than the 75 helicopters on the roof. We just left those allies. We just took off. That, maybe that's how they look at it.
That, I think that is how they look at it.
I do too. Like, I think they think they're doing great.
Yeah. And in fact, they talk about how great they're doing.
They
and
do. Remember inflation? Oh, it's transitory. Oh, it's no big deal. It's a bunch of wealthy people and their exercise machine. What they're basically saying is they like inflation because it erodes the value of people's wealth. If you have $100 in the bank at the end of the year, it's going to be worth $92. If you have nothing and you have low interest, then you are going to be in a better position. You're going to get cheaper loans until the whole blank hits the fan and you have to correct it for hyper. But they don't even want to do that.
Interest rates
to correct this locomotive that's going off the tracks of inflation, it should be about 7 or 8% right now.
Yeah,
it's not nearly enough. So they're going to drag it out and drag it out because they're scared to death of causing a recession before the midterm.
And they're most likely going to make the correction a lot worse than
they are. By
been.
Waiting, they're going to make it a lot worse. So there's a debate about who's running the country, and there's a debate whether Biden is crazy and he just doesn't know what's going on, or he does know, but they're incompetent, or they all know what's going on and they'd like it. And I think that's the latter. But the third debate is, when you have all this ideology and crazy stuff, how do you translate it into policy at the ground level? You do it with cabinet selections. They take over the bureaucracies and they start doing these executive orders and fiats. And that's the Pete Buttigiegs and the Lloyd Austins and the Jake Sullivans and the Jennifer Granholm and the Deb Hollands and the Pete Buttigiegs, and they are utter incompetence. And they can't open their mouth, they being the Biden administration people, without saying something that has nothing to do with whether the person is going to be qualified, could be, maybe, except their race, class, and gender. So Pete Buttigieg, we've been told, not that he had vast experience in transportation issues. No, that he was our first gay transportation secretary. What's her name, the new White House secretary?
Jean-Pierre.
What do we hear about her? We heard that she is the first Black woman, gay, first Black gay woman. Not that she is a complete disinformationist and has a whole record of crazy tweets about Donald Trump didn't win the election, all of this stuff, a denialist. And all we heard about was her race, class, and gender. And the same thing with Lloyd Austin, and the same thing, Jen Psaki. No one ever says this particular person brings wealth of experience. They all say that they got this degree, or they got, who cares about where they get a PhD, if they do have a PhD or a JD or anything. We want to know what they've done. Did they create a company? Did they reform an institution? No, they're all partisans. And they start talking about identity politics. So
yeah,
if you Googled, I'm just saying this off, if you Googled Deb Haaland, the Interior Secretary. Yeah. You wouldn't find anything what I just said about her pathetic testimony. You would hear again and again, she's the first Native American Interior Secretary. Jennifer, same thing with Jennifer. She's a female Department of Energy Secretary.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. And it's just completely, it doesn't mean that people who are picked for identity politics purposes are necessarily not as qualified. It's just that these bunch that they get also have the added requirement that they have to be hardcore ideologues on the left.
Yeah.
And so we've got a cabinetcy of dunces right now. It's dangerous.
It is very dangerous. Victor, let's take a second for some messages and come right back to talk about what you just touched on, which was the good news angle of the Democratic Party and our Democratic leadership. We'll be right back.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Well, everybody, Victor was talking and he went right on to my last topic here, which is that the way that the Democratic Party presents their administration's news is that all these things are great. Inflation's not so bad. Afghanistan, a little bit of a foible, but not too bad. The immigration, just forget about it. Not a big deal.
Baby formula. I just remember.
Baby formula.
It's no big deal because didn't Bette Midler say, well, just go breastfeed. That's what you should do. Just go breastfeed. Well, maybe exactly. Some kids are allergic to any type of, they have to have a special formula.
Yeah, well, the Democrats are so in fantasy land that, of course, they would say something that stupid.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe men, and if men can get pregnant, maybe they should breastfeed too.
Okay, so my question, well, I came across this quote from Social Neeson, where the guy was talking about this we can call it disinformation if you'd like to, because it really is this idea that all things are just so great in the economy right now. He goes, Social Neeson put it straight when he said, we know they are lying. They know they are lying. They know we know they are lying. We know they know we know they are lying, but they are still lying. And I was wondering, so I thought, yeah, so what is the pathology here? Are these liberals, quote unquote liberals, really just communists and fascists? Or are they just desperate and have this really poor leadership?
80% of the people have no ideology. So they just want to be in a winning team. So when the Obamas came in, they did certain things. They did things that we'd never heard of, and they've never been properly held accountable. They created this word diversity where they said anybody who's not white, forget about how wealthy, it can be LeBron, it can be an Indian immigrant, it can be a techie from Punjab, it can be an orthodontist from Korea. They have claims against the majority. They're diverse, 30% of the population. And that's when all this, Trayvon was like the son I never had, and were exceptional only to the degree of Greeks. They said things that were just crazy. The apology tour. Okay. So that was the new frontier. And people thought that's the future. And when you add all of the rise of globalism and the enrichment of the two coasts, most people thought, you know what? The corporations are kind of cool now, and Wall Street guys, I know they're making a lot of money, but they're kind of hipsters. They give to clean energy. And well, so look at Mark Zuckerberg, he's skateboarding in his tie-dye t-shirt, and wow, and Jack Dorsey, doesn't he have a ring in his nose, and they have flip-floppers, and that was the whole mood of the country. And so most people wanted to be on the winning team where the money was, and the globalization and tech was where the money and the hipsters were. So that explains the rise of a lot of these people. But the hardcore ideologues, these are people in the media who were trained by academics. academics, it's not, this isn't being led by the Longshores Union. It's not being led even by the SEIU. It's not being led by the United Coal Workers. Those guys are gone. This is a top-down elite academic. These are professors of environmental science, professors of literature, professor of political science at the top schools that are writing this stuff about, let's get rid of the two senators in each state. Let's get rid of the filibuster. Let's spread in Puerto Rico. Let's get 3,000 people in the House. These are revolutionaries, and they're very angry at this country that has enriched them. They're the wealthiest generation in the history of civilization. They're the most leisured. They're the most privileged. So it's very hard to be an angry revolutionary for them. So they start to look at oppression, and there's too many oppressed for the number of oppressors. So they take, what, 0.2% of the population that's transgendered, or what we used to call transsexuals, or maybe some are even transvestites, and they make this a majority issue that, you know, we're going to all, this is a horrible country unless men that transition can swim in women's sports. That's the new cause celeb. Or, you know, an abortion in month 8 or 9, that's a human rights issue to die on. So that's what they're looking for, things in this fat land of plenty, and they're looking for the underprivileged, and they keep redefining the underprivileged, and they're all wealthy, and they are all privileged, and they feel so rotten about it. They feel really rotten that they're for affirmative action, but when Johnny doesn't get into Princeton, they make a phone call to so-and-so who knows the dean to get him in. And when they think those walls are just terrible, they've got a nice Nancy Pelosi wall around Napa. What does she have one around her home for? Really, think about it. If she doesn't want one around her own country, why would she want one around her own home? Wouldn't she want people to come by and say, you know what? I was out working in the fields. I'm tired. I mean, I built one finding myself, but in the old days, I would have open, and I still do. I mean, I had some Hispanic guys that were a couple of 3 or 4 years ago, they were riding horses at night, and they just pulled in and said, Señor, we got trapped. It was the wrong time of night, and we got our horses. They were all decked out with sombreros and rodeo costumes. And I said, just tie those horses up right over there, and there's some good grass, and let them munch and sit down and have a good time. So she can't do that. Yeah. And they hate teachers. They hate any teachers who go into charter schools. They do not like school choice, and yet their kids, and they're all for teachers unions and public schools, and their kids are all in private school, all of them.
Yeah. And so what you're trying to
remember, that they're hypocrites, and they're never subject to any downside from their loud ideology.
And no, and thing,
they don't care. I get that. You really think that Pete Buttigieg cares about people can't get formula and they can't get it into the port of Los Angeles? No. Do you really think Jennifer Granholm is upset that a guy over here in Sanger, he's got about a 20-year-old diesel Ram, and he's getting about 15, you know, three-quarter ton truck, and it's full of all of his paint equipment. You think he can afford $7? I just filled up today. It was $6.60 for diesel. Went down a little bit. So she didn't care. Not
no.
Her lifestyle is. She doesn't care. You think Jake Sullivan cares that he concocted a whole myth, helped to concoct it, and it really hurt the country? He doesn't care. He doesn't care.
No, I think he went to Raytheon.
He was Raytheon lobbyist, and then he went into the defense secretary. Where will he go after he's secretary of defense? He'll go back to Raytheon.
Yeah.
He cares about
I don't think they care. And I think, though, that the lying is going to cut into their constituency, because I think that their constituency is, as you've just said, ideologues, and then the entitled people who are getting money from them through entitlements. But there's a big third of their constituency that's going to get really sick of being lied to like they are. And they're seeing it. I think we see that in things like, exactly. And I think we see that in Elon Musk, who used to be left wing and he's now on top of everything, or, you know, a whole host of other people that are just starting to.
Starts arguing on Twitter with his own newspaper. and then you've got Netflix that hired the Obamas to be creative consultants, and they poured out all that trash, and they lost, 200,000 subscribers? And they said, and then we have Bill Maher, who egged on all of this, and all of a sudden he thought, oh, my God, this is a Medusa. And I cut its head off every night and flip. Or, you know, Disney, you think Disney really likes the what it's going to happen to it? So
I think that the lying is the thing that's really going to win the election.
I think it's the existential. I think it's one thing to humiliate the country in Afghanistan. I think it's another to do critical race theory. I think it's another to turn Chicago into Tombstone and Seattle and Denver into a wasteland downtown. But it's quite a different thing when a mother with an allergic child cannot get formula. Or a very hardworking guy who's a independent contractor cannot afford to fill up his pickup to go to work. Or a guy that drives 18 hours on that road in a diesel semi can't make any money. He's going to have to park that. Or somebody in the inner city can't walk across the street to a park without being shot. So the stuff of life, the existential question, can you get up every morning and find food to eat? Can you find fuel to move? Will you be safe in your neighborhood? And is your country safe, whether it's on the southern border or vis-a-vis China? And the answer is no, no, no. And people are saying, this isn't America.
And the last question is, are you going to continue to believe these liars, these lying people?
I don't know. We'll see. Well, the first shoe to fall is going to be the Mexican-American community, because they have been nurtured with the Democratic in a very patronizing fashion. You owe us. You owe us. We opened the border. We gave you all these entitlements. You owe us. And these are usually young Latinos who are in academia or in the media, but they're not the majority. And I think a lot of Mexican-Americans, I don't know anybody. I get up every day and I work hard. And who I am or what I look like is determined by my character. And I can't work under the conditions that you forced me to work on. And I can't buy a house, and I can't pay rent, and I can't take my family and drive 30 miles to a movie. You did that. I didn't do that. And I'm not going to vote for you anymore. And we'll see how smart the Republicans are. If they go back to, I'm Mitt Romney, and I can never reach 47% of the country because they're on the dole, or I'm Bain Capital, or they make fun of John McCain because he can't remember his 11 houses or whatever, and he doesn't fight back. He doesn't fight back at all, or he gets a Steve Schmidt or a guy like that as advisors, or then it's not going to work. But if you get a fighter and a person who is a person of the people, doesn't mean he can't be educated, he can't be degreed, but a person who feels comfortable with himself and with his own Malou, and I keep saying this anecdote. I know people are sick of it, but I talked to two or three people. I didn't particularly like Trump. I didn't support him in the primaries. I thought he was cruel, but I was intrigued by his, you know, our farmers, our soldiers, that empathy for the losers that nobody had expressed. And I asked some very well-known, successful people, and one person said something I'll never forget. He said, I looked out of a building once and I saw him pull over. Nobody knew he was watching. And he had a black suit and he walked in the filthy dirt to talk to a bunch of cement workers. And they all clapped. Why would he do that? Maybe it's, I don't know. But he did feel comfortable with people of the middle classes. Look at his diet.
You mean those McDonald's hamburgers and ice cream?
Well, Obama was bragging, worried about the price of arugula, which I like arugula, but, and So that's what I'm getting at, that if the Republicans can have a populist, nationalist, inclusive party and make class one of the unifying points and not race and not wealth and not just capital gains. I'm for reducing the capital gains. I really think deregulation would unleash a lot of primordial energy. I'm for that. But they have to talk about, we're going to create a climate where you can get a good job, you can buy a house, and we're going to allow people to build homes. We're going to allow people to develop gas. Yeah. We're going to allow people to mine and cut wood. And we need you people to help us. And that's what I hope follows from this.
Yeah, it's coming. I think that we'll get back to a state like that, Victor. Well, we're going to call it a day here. Thank you very much for all your wisdom on the domestic world and the cabinet in particular, which was an interesting roundtable, if I can call it that. But thank you very much, Victor.
Thank you. And thank everybody for listening. I appreciate it every day. I'm always, when I travel, people come up and say they listen to the podcast. I'm just astounded because, you know, I'm up in this old house in this upstairs bedroom thinking that maybe there's six people somewhere that are listening. And the fact that there's more than that is, it makes me have a lot of gratitude for all of you.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Thank you. This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.